Welcome back to the second hour. We're talking with Marty Leeds about his work on Pi, the English alphabet, and all the ancient texts that incorporate mathematical constants and numbers that are permeating throughout those works. Why don't we talk about some examples, Marty, that you've managed to extract from your methodology? I know that there's a number of ones that we talked about before that we could dive into.
Yeah, maybe what we can do is go into Jesus Christ and then go into what, the symbolism of what the allegory of Jesus Christ means and the relationships of the human consciousness to the creation, if you will. That might be a good way to start.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just kind of break down Jesus Christ here. I've got an entire video on this. It's like a 33-minute video, actually, that you can check out. And so what I do is I put the numbers to the letters of Jesus Christ and using the cipher. So the cipher is, once again, it's you splitting the letters A through M and N through Z, and then just walking up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z is the exact same thing. So very easy to construct yourself and write down and double check everything that I'm saying here. So what I did is I took this cipher to the letters of Jesus Christ. So we're just going to go over this. This is pretty extensive, but I'll try to abbreviate it a little bit anyway. Jesus is J-E-S-U-S, and this is 4-5-6-6-6. This is the numbers of Jesus. And notice the number 666 in Jesus, of course, which is not a number of the devil or anything like that. It's actually a number of wisdom and a number of man, as told
us by. I thought so. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I always think, it's so funny when people talk about it, it's like, that's a number attached to like Lucifer or something
right.
like that.
Yeah,
and then Lucifer, it's like, okay, well, just look up the, the definition and the meaning, and it means light bringer.
Yep.
And it's just like, okay, what's wrong with light? Light has always been symbolically the creative force of the creator, truth, wisdom, love, etc. So it's like, okay, so somewhere along the way that's been perverted and bastardized. So anyway, that's beyond that. So Jesus Christ is our light bringer. That's exactly what it is. It has nothing to do with the devil. So
the morning anyway, star, the evening star, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing, right? Yeah. So J-E-S-U-S is 4-5-6-6-6. And then Christ is C-H-R-I-S-T, and this is 3-6-5-5-6-7. Well, first thing we're going to do is just take a look at the name of Jesus. Jesus is 4-5-6-6-6, and this equals 27. Well, 27 is a number of enlightenment in Buddhism. 27 is very important because it's nothing more than 3 times 3 times 3. And of course, so that's 3 cubed, of course. And of course, we're dealing with a member of the Holy Trinity, so that kind of makes sense. There's a lot of other words that actually sum to 27 as well, dealing with Jesus. The Greek symbol of the chi rho, this equals 27. Jesus was born in the winter. Winter equals 27. He was known as the Lamb of God. Equals 27. He was known as the light. Light equals 27. Gnosis is the divine mystical insight equals 27. So a lot of words associated with, he was born in Nazareth. This equals 27. So a lot of words associated with Jesus that directly refer to, that you can associate with this number 27. So now the name Jesus is, you can break this up into syllables. So you can break it up into Jesus. So J-E-S-U-S. And this gives you the numbers 4-5-6-6-6. Well, just as if you look on your phone, you have this breakdown of the numbers 1 through 9 and then the 0. Well, if you just add this across, like literally as it's shown on your phone, it's 1 + 2 + 3 = 6, 4 + 5 + 6 = 15, and 1 + 5 = 6, and 7 + 8 + 9 = 24, and 2 + 4 = 6. So this literally gives you the numbers 666, and then adding 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 together gives you the number 45. And so reading the name Jesus left to right is 4-5-6-6-6, and this is exactly what you get when you break up the numbers 1 through 9. And this breakdown of the numbers 1 through 9 is exactly how it's broken down in what's known as the Christian angelic hierarchy. It's broken down into 3 levels. So it's, I can't remember what they are, but seraphim, cherubim, something, so it's right. 3 levels of 3. So,
yeah.
So the same breakdown. So that's Jesus. So what we can do is also multiply Jesus. So 4 × 5 × 6 × 6 × 6 is this number 4,320. Well, there's in two processional ages, with the precession of the equinoxes being the standard 25,920 year. This is pretty much the generally agreed upon number. This is two ages. So you have an age of 2,160 years. Two of those ages would be 4,320. This number 432 is really important. And looking at the number 432 and looking at it different scales. So 432 is something I'm sure you've had plenty of guests on your show that have talked about this in thematics. And I mean, it's pretty popular now. And there's a reason that it is because you actually see this number come up again and again and again in this canon of number, if you will. So, so the number 432, we're just going to take a look at this number 432 quick. Once again, we multiply Jesus 4 times 5 times 6 times 6 times 6, giving this number 4,320. We're going to look at variations of this number 432. So the degree of phylotaxis, and we're going to get back into this, is this, it's a very specific degree in which leaves will arrange themselves around a plant. So a leaf will not be on top of another leaf. It'll actually be tilted a little bit. You know, it'll be, it's basically arranged this way so that every single leaf can receive like the most amount of sun and that's rain, right, and that sort of thing. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Well, this is 137.5 is this degree, very specific degree. Well, 137.5, which is a constant in nature, times the mathematical constant of pi is 432.025. So you take this constant in nature, degree of phylotaxis, and times it by pi, and you get 432. The Great Pyramid of Giza is a scale model of one hemisphere of the Earth. And this is a ratio of 1 to 43,200. So if you take the Great Pyramid of Giza as it is, as we see it, multiply by 43,200, its base will sit on the equator. And then where the missing capstone would be would hit the North Pole, if you will. And so this is, once again, just a variation of 432. It's 43,200. There's 43,200 minutes, or excuse me, seconds in a half day. So 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 12 hours in a half day. 60 times 60 times 12 is 43,200. So, and then, of course, the radius of the sun is 432,000. So once again, we just see this number 432 at different scales in time and space and botanical, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And this is once again, it's encoded in the name of Jesus. So that's Jesus. That's just kind of a breakdown. Let's go to Christ here. Christ is the numbers C-H-R-I-S-T, giving the numbers 365567. Well, the first three numbers is 365. So of course, we're talking about Jesus Christ being the Son of God. Well, it would make sense that they would find the number of days in the solar year being 365. So that's CHR. And then the next three numbers are 567. Well, 5 plus 6 plus 7 is 18. And Jesus went missing in the Bible. We hear about Jesus up till he's age 12. And then we pick back up the story at age 30. So he's missing 18 years. Yeah. And this is just kind of left to our imagination. Well, this gives us two numbers, 12 and 30. Missing at age 12, starts his ministry at age 30. It's 12 ages of the zodiac and 30 degrees of each age. So this is a very ingenious and cryptic way of coding the fact that we're talking about the sun and we're also talking about, you know, of course, the zodiac and his 12 disciples. So that's Christ. Now, what's also interesting is Christ. We just talked about that degree of phylotaxis, right, which is a degree of 137.5 degrees. Very, very specific degree. Well, Christ is 365567. If you multiply these numbers, you get this number 18,900. Well, the square root of 18,900, the multiplication of Christ, is 137.48. So you're 99.98% to this very specific degree of phylotaxis, and this is encoded right in the name. We can look at Jesus and Christ. Jesus equals 27 again. Christ equals 32. 27, or Jesus plus Christ equaling 32, is 59. And there are 59 beads in a Christian rosary. So there's this rosary. My mother has one. And she actually, when the first time I told her this, she grabbed her rosary right away and counted them all. And she was just like stunned. And it's like, okay, so she has this rosary. And this was given to her by her grandma by her mother, who got it from her grandma, I believe.
Right.
And so this is a very old rosary. And people have these all the time. In fact, I went to it doesn't really matter. I went to this church and I was noticing these people and they were literally counting the number of beads on their rosary. So here these people are, they're going to church, they're kneeling and praying, and they're believing in this man that lived 2,000 years ago, supposedly, and they're counting the number of beads on the Christian rosary, having no idea why. Yeah. There's this very specific number.
Wow.
And then we look right into the numerology and it tells you why. So now all we're going to do is take, so we just added 27 plus 32. Now all we're going to do is take 27 times 32, or Jesus times Christ. And Jesus times Christ is 864, and the diameter of the Son of God, is 864,000 miles.
Wow.
So now what's also interesting about this is that Teotihuacan, they have the huge complex. It's the Toltec complex where they have the pyramid of the sun and the pyramid of the moon, you know? Well, this whole complex is built with what's known as called STU, standard Teotihuacan units. Well, the pyramid of the sun, is built with, wait for it, 864 of these. And so we find this very specific number that's, we find it in Mayan, you know, or excuse me, this Toltec complex, excuse me, and then we find it right in Jesus.
But that transcends planning, though. You know, same as, you know, I'm looking at the book here, the radius of the sun, obviously half of what you mentioned before, 4,320,000 miles. It's like, this is something that wasn't known at the time, but it's something that works for some interesting, very interesting reason.
Well, I mean, I think it was known at the time. That's what I mean. This is, of course, a huge challenge to what modern academia thinks about what's going on in our history.
Right.
I mean, when you look at people like, you know, we talked about in the first segment of the history of this, when you look at guys like Kepler and Copernicus and John Dee and these, and William Shakespeare and all the people that supposedly wrote, you know, those places, I mean, these people were brilliant. You know, I mean, they were brilliant people. I mean, do we have anybody that's living today that even can touch some of these guys? In my opinion, no.
Right.
You know, and so this really shows that, once again, it kind of clarifies what's going on with the Holy Bible. It's showing that this is passing on deep knowledge, and this knowledge has been hidden. And I think this is exactly what the Holy Roman Empire was doing, that they were hiding this knowledge. And they absolutely knew about the heliocentric system. They absolutely knew about the diameter and radius of the sun and all of that stuff, you know, but they were hiding it from the general public, just as they're doing right now. You know,
yeah.
This is going on right now.
Sure.
And that's what I'm really trying to focus on. So anyway, that's Christ. That doesn't even count all the other stuff that we can do with it. It's really insane. And then we really have to step back and ask a question like, okay, well, number one, anybody that's listening can do this math. Anybody. You don't have to believe me or trust me or buy my book. You can do it all yourself, you know. So that's the first thing. So this can be empirically proven not by the mathematicians at MIT or by Neil deGrasse Tyson or whatever. It can be proven by you, you know.
Right.
And that's the important thing. So all of this stuff is encoded in this name. And then we ask, okay, well, so what? You know, okay, so all of this stuff is encoded in this name. Well, what does this have to do with the spiritual context of this, right?
They must say, whatever. You could find numbers in anything, right? If you look at it long enough, you'll find anything in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get that all the time.
Right.
Which is so funny because it's like, okay, I understand that there is definitely a level of me using my creativity and imagination with this, right? I'm not shying away from that at all. I think a holistic thinking uses both critical thinking and imaginative thinking.
Of course.
You know, number one. I mean, I think, and this is something that we've talked about before with our modern scientists and this kind of boxed in critical thinking that they're doing, which is kind of just criticizing. Yes, you can make numbers fit anything. Okay, yeah, maybe, except I'm not doing that with this. This is very specific numbers to a very specific name that's known in the Holy Bible, et cetera, and a very specific cipher coming up with very specific numbers attributed to the sun. So that's not playing with math. That's not me, you know. This is, like I said, you can do all this. So that's, you know, that's the criticism that I keep getting. And really, it's just kind of ignorant. That's all it really is, you know. The other criticism that I kind of...
Right, right. Let's see. Let me ask you this. Have you tried the name Jesus Christ in Greek or Aramaic or Hebrew and gotten the same results? Or does it just work in the English language in this particular example?
Well, in this particular example, this is how it plays out in English. The reason that I haven't done any, I'm about to do a video. I was going to do it today, but I just didn't get around to do it about looking at the Hebrew language, the Hebrew alphabet, and using the English cipher and the Hebrew alphabet and showing how you can make this direct cross correlation between the two using the transcendental number of pi, which I know we can't go into this here, but it actually comes up with the number 432 twice, which is just insane, but we can't go into that. I haven't done that. And the reason I haven't done that is, well, number one, I'm so busy with this. But number two, I don't speak any other languages. And I mean, so in order for me to go into Latin or Greek, you know, I mean, I've studied Hebrew quite a bit, you know, I understand the alphabet fairly well, but I don't speak it. And so for me, it's really difficult to try to go in and try to understand this stuff without speaking the language. And that's the problem that I've had. And I just don't have time to learn another language. And this is why I'm trying to put this information out for people that do that are multilingual or bilingual or whatever.
Right.
That we could pick this stuff up and say, hey, well, I speak Hebrew and English. Let me see this, you know? And that's what I'm truly hoping to do, because honestly, I'll just be honest, I need some help. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm the only one that's really doing this right now. And so it's full time work. I mean, it's day and night, night and day, you know. So but no, I would love to know that. But from what I understand, if this is translated from the original Greek text, from the original Hebrew Septuagint, from the Latin, then there's no, without question, this is in those languages as well.
Right. Yeah, it's going to echo that in some way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I just kind of wanted to say something about Christ really quick here, about the idea of what does Jesus Christ mean? Okay, so we can establish that they were talking about the sun in our sky, right? He's dead for 3 days, resurrects. This is, of course, the astronomical phenomenon that we see every single year in the rebirth of our year. This is pretty well established by, you know, tons of different researchers, right? We see it in Zeitgeist and Acharya S. and Santo Spinacci talks about this, et cetera, ad infinitum. So, but now we have some mathematics to prove this. But now what I'm saying is that Jesus Christ is not just a story about the sun and the sky. It's and the ancient people of the past weren't just worshiping the sun. They were worshiping what the sun symbolized. And that sun symbolizes the centering light and enlivening consciousness of the human being. And this is kind of what I alluded to in the first segment of the idea of the man's place in the cosmos. And this is what the Lord is. This is why he is the Lord Jesus Christ. There's two names of God in the Bible, and this is called God and Lord. And we see the exact same thing in Hinduism. I'll get into this in a second, but God in the Bible is the wholeness. It's everything. It's the all-encompassing, all that was, shall be, and is, the omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresence. It's everywhere you look, everything you can possibly think of. This is the term that's given that's we call simply God in the Holy Bible. So this is everything. But everything is focused onto a central point, and that central point is the Lord. And so what Jesus Christ is representing is the Christ consciousness, or the consciousness, or the energy source that's within the human vessel. And so the idea is you're supposed to relate to the character of Jesus Christ in the Bible. You're not supposed to worship a man or worship the Son. What you're supposed to do is worship the Son that is within you. And I forget what verse it is, but they say, the Lord thy God. Because they're telling you that the Lord, Jesus Christ, is representative of the Christ consciousness, or the energy source within you, and that is your God. And that is what you're supposed to worship. You're supposed to worship the self and respect, love, admire the self. And then, of course, once you can't love the universe unless you love the self first. You know, you can't love another human being unless you love yourself first. It never works, you know. And so this is the deep spiritual message that's behind Jesus Christ. So I just wanted to say that.
Very, very good. Now, another thing that occurs to me as you mentioned this is, of course, that it in many circles then it did become about it became about Jesus Christ, the man, not themselves or the numbers of what this represents in the sky or the sun or any of this stuff. Do you think that the concept was too? There's a couple of different possibilities here, but one here is that the concept was basically too difficult for some reason. The people at the time when Christianity was formulated. Might have been they thought, it's too complicated for people to understand all this. Well, you know, because one sense is then, well, but why not just share the knowledge that this is universal truth? This is in the numbers and the measurements, and you know, this is the science of how life is made on Earth, etc. Or you have the other possibility that okay, this had to go underground. It was something that was competing with the powers that be at the time, the clergy or what have you, that simply didn't want this to be. To be known, but they decided to incorporate it into a symbolic story and a way of telling the story and attracting people to that, to those knowledge, you know, constants. Anyway, what do you think about that, Marty?
Let me see if I can answer this the best way I can here. You know, sorry, give me a second here.
No worries.
Let me say this. I think I said this last time I was on your show too, but I'm a guy of mediocre intelligence. I am not that intelligent of a guy. The stuff that I'm showing here is ridiculously simple. I mean, the cipher is created. It uses the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 four different times. You know what I mean? It uses it
right.
four times.
Yep.
I mean, that's just ridiculously simple. The geometry I'm showing is simple. The mathematics, I don't do any algebra or trigonometry. I mean, I do a little bit of algebra, a little bit of trigonometry, but barely. What I do is add, subtract, multiply, and divide. You know, everything that I'm showing, if you take the time, it's very easy to learn. And so when we look at this, when we say that maybe it's like too complex for people, I don't think it's too complex for people. I just think that just as we see throughout history, we have people that have tried to usurp this stuff and use it for control systems. And that's exactly what we see going on right now. So we have we have a dumbing down of our culture, right? We don't get taught simple geometry. We don't get taught symbolism. We don't get taught, you know, all of the subjects that I'm dealing with are considered pseudosciences. Why are they considered pseudosciences, right? What am I dealing with? Numerology, you know, well Pythagoras dealt with numerology, you know, astrology. Well, that's not a real science, you know, gematria. Oh, you're kidding me. Putting numbers to letters, you know, symbolism. Oh, really? That's interpretive. You know, all of these things are not taught yet. All of these things at their fundamental core are very simple. You know, and
right.
really what I think is the experience that I've had is it connects you once again to nature, you know. And so these are the subjects that are dismissed, called pseudosciences, you know, numerology, that's recreational math, et cetera, and but at the heart of all of these sciences is a true just beauty and simplicity to it. And all of these control factions, whether it's the Vatican or the governments of the world or the military industrial, whatever it is that are usurping this knowledge, are just convoluting it and distorting it and perverting it. So people of average intelligence like myself will not get it, you know?
Right.
And then of course, what happens? We spend, and it really, God, it really irritates me because people, we have this all the time, that people look at their fellow man and they're like, oh, that guy's a fucking idiot. That guy's a moron. Well, you know, what happens when you spend 12 years in a state-run education?
That's right.
Of course what you're going to get, an idiot yep. and a moron. So when you go and you call your fellow man an idiot or, an, you know, that sort of thing, what are you doing? And then so we've gone so far as to even say that this is human nature. Stupidity is human nature. No, it's not. No, it's not. The human being, just like every single animal, needs to be taught, you know, how to live in this world. You know, it needs to be taught the right things in order to understand who he is, who she is, where they came from, where they're going, and how to be a warrior of the heart and mind and soul and body and spirit and all of that. If a mother bear, you know, if a mother bear doesn't teach her cub how to hunt and how to forage and you know, fatten up for the winter, that cub's going to die. And we're in the exact same position as humanity. If we don't get taught these fundamental things, then we get into the situation that we're in right now.
Yeah. I know, just a funny side note on that, by the way, in the term idiot and the usage of that word, it derives from the Greek word idiotes, and that actually means a private citizen, an individual, a private or one's own. So sometimes I don't mind be calling that, actually.
Oh, yeah. So it's a badge of honor.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Oh, you consider me as an individual. Thank you. You know, I'm not part of the collective. So.
Well, it's kind of the same thing with like anarchy, right? That's, you know, well, without master, that's what it means, right?
Exactly. And it's used usually in a derogatory manner or representing chaos or something. But, you know, again, it's the usage of the true English term. People don't do that anymore either. They learn the wrong words or the wrong connotations of it. So that's another concept in itself that I think also it changes to the language and the meaning of it, right? Of how we use all of these words when it you know, holds these mathematical numbers behind them, and then we misuse them and everything else. I think that's also a fatal mistake and might take us off in the wrong direction as well, right?
It's casting a spell. That's what they're doing. They're using words to manipulate and distort our reality and how we perceive reality, and they're using words in the wrong context, just like we talked about with Lucifer, right? And
yep.
and they're using it to, like, you know, like I said, mind control people. And this is what casting a spell is. This is why the gospel is called the go spell. You know, this is why sibyls are, you know, sibyls come from syllables, seances come from sentences, rites come from writing. These people, these, if you will, the dark occultists that are behind the scenes pulling the strings, right, the puppeteers of the world, are using this language to manipulate this. Now, you don't even have to believe in mysticism or anything, you know, anything that's coming out of my mouth to see this. What do you think the Black's Law Dictionary is in legalese? They're using a language and law to bind people. That's exactly what they're doing. So we are being spellbound because they are casting a spell upon humanity. And if people understood the, you know, the dark occult nature of this stuff, well, the good thing about the, you know, dark occult is there's a light occult too. There's a beauty to this stuff, and it can also empower you. You know, once you understand this information, you can't be manipulated by it. You know, so
yeah, is that how you see it as well? Is it's a kind of a liberating factor? I mean, because I think it's, again, it's a holistic science. It's not only about overcoming the you know, the barrier of you know, the fallacy of authority or appeal to authority, that you're like, okay, I don't, you know, all these systems that are in place to you know, lock in and everything else, you can transcend certain things of your understanding. But then on top of it, language itself is such a barrier, such a encapsulating force. It's quite liberating to understand what the words really mean, and you know, what they carry behind them, the etymology and everything. It's a massive study in itself, just to understand the words we use and how they bind us psychologically when we use them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the arcane science of old is, I think, has always been through the mathematics. I mean, I think quoting Alvin Boyd Kuhn again or something, said, I think that all the, you know, all the Kabbalists, the people that, you know, the Zohar and things like that, they knew that the creation of our universe was done through the letters of the alphabet. And it's just the people that created or understood the alphabet that really understood that. I mean, our language, when you look at our, you know, when you look at every single letter, I mean, that's a symbol, right? I mean, very definition, Merriam-Webster's dictionary. Just go and look up what a letter is, and it's a symbol. So obviously, what is a symbol? Well, it's symbolic of something. Of course, we're not taught any of this stuff, right? We just read words and we just assume, you know, and it's like, this is really what's binding us. This is really what's spellbinding us, is not understanding the deep etymology, the roots, and then the fact that when we are reading a text, we're reading symbols. And so, of course, what are they symbolic of? Let me give you an example. Let's look at the letter T. Let's look at the letter S. This is an easier one. What is the letter S symbolic of? Well, what does it look like? Does it look like a serpent? I mean, right? And of course, look at the word seraphim. Look at the word serpent. Look at the word snake. Look at the word, you know, what does a snake do? It slithers across the ground. How does it slither across the ground? Well, it undulates in a sinusoidal movement. Of course, this is a sine wave. So all of those letters start with S. A sine wave is exactly a letter S, you know? And so then we say, okay, well, what is the letter S, especially if you're dealing with, you know, mathematics, and you look at the letter S, well, what is it symbolic of? Well, is it symbolic of a sine wave? Well, how many, you know, the words that I'm speaking right now are coming out of my mouth in a sine wave. So is it so wild to think that these ancient people knew this? I'm saying this is exactly what they knew. And this, and then they were actually trying to pass on this knowledge to us through the alphabet.
Do you think that there is a potency in older languages that were more powerful than it is now? I mean, if we go back to the roots of things, you know, old kind of Indo-European languages and stuff, I mean, they're all kind of very much related in the early days there, but nonetheless, it seems to have been I know there's a couple of books that talks about this too, the rightful naming of something, for example, granted you to a certain degree, you know, power over it, or that you could, you know, master it if you knew its true word. And since English is such a latecomer on the scene, is that something that's been lost along the way, or has it been refined and it's even more potent with English now?
I have to answer this kind of mystically or spiritually, if you will. I mean, I think the Creator is always with us, and so is really always on our side. It's just asking us to understand it. So I think every single language that's ever been created is beautiful in its own right, and was understood by the culture that used it. Maybe not understood, you know, just like our culture doesn't understand our language, I would say, in a large respect.
Yeah.
But I think that all of those cultures that were that deeply understood numerology, deeply understood that, you know, etymology, and deeply understood the symbolic aspect of our language, I think that every single language speaks of the cosmological principles at work within creation. And I think that anything that comes out that's beautiful, that really lasts, has that core beneath it, if you will. Does that make sense?
Certainly does, Marty. 10 emanations you mentioned earlier. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. How much time do we have?
We have plenty of time. We'll make time. No worries about that.
Okay. I was thinking about going into this and going into it, the same concept, and finding it through the Holy Bible, the title of the book.
Yep.
This Ten Emanations of God, this comes from the Sefer Yetzirah, ancient Kabbalistic book. It's the 32 wondrous ways of wisdom. And this is where, of course, this number 32, 33 comes up again. And, Scottish Rite Freemasonry, a number of bones in your spine is 33. And so there's been this really kind of focus of an esotericism of 32 and 33. Well, in the Sefer Yetzirah, 32 wondrous ways of wisdom, this is the 22, this creates the Kabbalistic tree of life. And this is the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and then, of course, what's known as the 10 Sephiroth. And Sephiroth means emanation, but it's basically referring to counting, accounting or enumeration, if you will. Well, this 10 emanations of God is very important in the Sefer Yetzirah. In fact, it says, there are 10 emanations of God, not 9, not 11. 10 emanations of God. And what the philosophy behind this is that your 10, your 8 fingers and 2 thumbs, your 10 appendages on your 2 hands are really a template for universal mathematics, if you will. And that to truly understand really the entire thing, the creator, if you will, when we stood up, if you will, or however we were created, whatever you want to believe, that it gave us the tools that we needed right in our hands. And this is the 10 emanations of God. So we can understand this through Holy Bible. If you notice, of course, it's called the Holy Bible, right? And that holy, this is the translation as it is in English. Well, isn't it interesting that it's called the Holy Bible? Bible means book, right?
Right.
Bible comes from biblios. This is where we get bibliotech. There's an etymological root of liber, which is, of course, where we get liberty, liberation, library.
Yep.
But in English, what is a book called? Well, it's called a book. So when the people that were translating the Holy Bible from the original Greek, why the hell didn't they just call it a holy book? Well, that would make sense, right? This is in English, but they called it a Holy Bible. Why? Let's look into this. This is where we can go into the esoteric and symbolic nature of our own language. When I say to you holy, what did I just say? Did I just say WHOLLY or did I say HOLY? Well, in order for us to really truly communicate with each other, we would have to explain more. If I said that, what did I just say? Oh, okay, well, I meant HOLY. So therefore, I'm saying that this is sacred, this is holy, this is sacred, this is divine, this is hallowed. Right? That's the definition of holy.
Right.
If I say WHOLLY, we're talking about the all, the entirety of. So the first word in Holy Bible is given you phonetically, or the sounds that are emitting from your mouth, two definitions. Sacred and hallowed and the all of entirety, right? Well, okay, so that's a message right there. It's saying what's holy? Everything. That's what it's saying. Now let's go to Bible. Holy is, actually, before we go to that, holy is a circle. That's what it is. A whole is, of course, a circle. W-H-O-L-E is a circle. And, of course, we talked about this earlier, but in sacred geometrical canon, heaven was always a circle. And so, of course, a circle actually geometrically, the meaning of a circle geometrically encapsulates the most amount of space. So it's literally all or the entirety of. So that's holy. Bible, of course, once again, we're not saying book. Bible is bi means two and L means God. L is a phonetic sound for God in Akkadian or Aramaic, Hebrew, Latin, Syriac. I mean, all of these different languages have this phonetic sound. Of course, phonetics comes from Phoenician, phonetic sound of L being God. So we have a holiness and a by L, two gods. That's what it's saying. There's a wholeness and then there's a separation of a by and a L. So let's go look for these two gods. When you lay out your hands, just lay them out right now and look. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You got 10 fingers. Wow, anybody can understand that, right? You know, fourth graders and third graders and all that stuff can understand that. What we're going to do is put the numbers to the letters of the words 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Using the English cipher that I got from the Holy Bible. So 1, for instance, is O-N-E is 215, this equals 8. T-W-O is 742, this equals 13. 3 is T-H-R-E-E, this is 76555, this equals 28. I'm just going to go over this quick. 4 equals 19, 5 equals 21, 6 equals 14, 7 equals 22. 22 divided by 7 is pi, by the way. So pi is encoded in the number 7. 8 equals 30, 9 equals 12, and 10 equals 13. So I'll just say this again. 1 is 8, 2 is 13, 3 is 28, 4 is 19, 5 is 21, 6 is 14, 7 is 22, 8 is 30, 9 is 12, and 10 is 13. If you add this up, putting the exact numbers to the exact letters of these various particular words, it equals 180. So what's 180? Well, it's the internal degrees of any triangle, right? It's also a semicircle. So putting your hands out, putting the numbers to the letters of the, you know, words 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 gives you 180. Well, for instance, when you and Lana hold hands or whatever, when she puts her hands out and you put her hands in yours, that equals the 360 degrees of a circle. Literally, that's the exact mathematics. Anybody can do that. Yep. So what's being said there, right? Well, what are you? What happens when two people join hands? Communion, love, appreciation, you know, affection, that sort of thing. So you're talking about 10 emanations of God coming from, and this, by the way, this has nothing to do with homosexuality. When two people join hands, does it matter if they have a penis or a vagina? No. It's, you're talking about two people coming together through love and communion. That's the force of nature. That's the force of God. It's nothing to do with homosexuality, by the way. So two people, when they join hands, they're making literally the holiness, the 360 degrees of a circle. And that's 180 and 180. And so when we talk about the 10 emanations of God, that's exactly what they're saying in the Sefer Yetzirah, the Sefer Yetzirah. They're talking about the 10 emanations of God, and those 10 emanations are right on your two hands.
Interesting. Yeah, because I mean, it's a very interesting mirror effect going on. You show this in the book as well with the phalanx of the hands, and we've talked briefly about that before as well, Marty, but it's just, it just shows that, you know, one thing is built on another, nothing stands isolated on its own and doesn't, you know, mean anything. Everything builds on everything else, and it's just even incorporated into the very fabric of the first thing we see when we look up, our own hands, you know, the thing that we make things with, the thing that it enforces change in the world, basically. You know, the hand is a powerful tool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's really, I mean, even modern science says this is one of the things that gave us our higher consciousness, right? I mean, it allowed us to manipulate the material world. It allowed us to write. I mean, when we pick up the Holy Bible or any sort of book, what do? You use both hands to do it. You know, so we write with these things, we cook, we make love, we work, etc. This allows us this higher consciousness. And so, and honestly, rationally and scientifically, it makes sense that these are this sort of, if you will, cosmological principles that are right on your hands, you know. One other thing that's really interesting about this is, if you notice, if you equate that 180 degrees that you find on the 10 emanations of your two hands, 180 degrees to a semicircle. Well, a semicircle coming together with its opposite, of course, because when your left hand joins her right hand and then your right hand joins her left, that's opposites. That's a mirror. That's symmetry, right? Yep. So you have 180 and 180. So what you're doing is bringing together 280 degrees of a circle. And then, of course, there's a separation. There's a diameter right down the middle of those two, if you will. And that is, of course, the geometry of pi. Now, what's interesting about this is holy, H-O-L-Y, is 6222. This equals 12. And Bible is B-I-B-L-E is 25225, and this equals 16. So holy equals 12, and Bible equals 16. Let me just make sure that you get this. Holy equals 12, Bible equals 16. Do you know what the numbers between 12 and 16 are? They're 13, 14, and 15. If you drop a 1 in that 3 and put a decimal place after the 3, you have 3.1415, and that's exactly what you did when you created the holy Bible, the two gods coming together through love, communion, appreciation, and you created the holy. You created the sacred.
Wow, so fascinating. Really, really interesting. You know, why don't we just briefly here talk a little bit about The Peacock, Claudia Pavonis, and that particular book as well. That's another one you have out, Marty. I've been reading through some of the material in it. Very, very interesting as well. It picks up on everything that you've written from this, you can explain it, but alter ego, I guess, comes through that name, right?
Yeah. My name isn't even Marty Leeds. That's a pseudonym as well. So Marty Leeds and Claudia Pavonis are two pseudonyms that I adopted. And I adopted Marty Leeds when I was like, really just unconsciously, you know, it was very organic. I don't even know why I did it. I had no, you know, I don't even really remember why in some respects. And I did this when I was like maybe 19 or 20 or something like that. And then Claudia Pavonis came about when I was finishing my first book, Pi the Great Work, which is no longer available. It's out of print now. But in that first book, I didn't have the cipher. So I basically used this female pseudonym that I adopted, and I didn't have the cipher yet. It would have been a couple months after I had released the book that I had actually deconstructed it. So I was going through this process, this like spiritual, psychological process or whatever you want to call it. And I gave myself creatively these two pseudonyms and that I used in my writing. And it was only later that I uncovered that it was like, okay, there was a bunch of just, I mean, the mathematics, everything, all the philosophy that I was looking into were encoded in these names. whether it was Pi or whether it was the base 10 system, something like kind of we just talked about, you know, or whether it was as above, so below, the Great Pyramid of Giza dimensions, all of this stuff was encoded in these names perfectly. And I had no idea about any of this. I'm just being honest, man. I had no idea. I didn't have the cipher, and all of this worked out beautifully. And so I ended up writing about that. And the reason I ended up kind of being drawn towards adopting a female pseudonym was because of my study of alchemy, basically. Alchemy, there's this very consistent theme that you see in a lot of alchemical illustrations. He's Anastasius Kircher, once again. My favorite one is Henrik Nolius. It's Rebus. It's R-E-B-I-S. And what it shows, and you'll see this time and time again, that you'll have a single person and you'll have two heads, and it'll be a male and female.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what I was doing is understanding that, and I kind of adopted these two pseudonyms, Marty Leeds and Claudia Pavonis, based on this idea. Well, what is being expressed in there is that the fact that your body is made of electromagnetism, that your body, the energy source, the Lord, if you will, that energy source is made of electromagnetism, which is a positive and negative. And of course, that positive and negative is nothing more than gender. That's what you're talking about.
Yep.
And so the human being is created with both male and female aspects. And I think that the spiritual work is recognizing those aspects within you, not only recognizing them, but respecting them, letting both of those, both male and female parts of you, come together and merge into one being. And let me read this. This is a book called Sacred Path Cards by Jamie Sams. It says, and basically she was a Seneca native, and she was talking about a lot of their rituals and philosophies and things like that. And it says, we humans are catalyzers who have electromagnetic giving and receiving bodies. We are the bridge that connects earth and sky when we are in harmony. Like Mother Earth and Father Sky, we are male and female in nature. The command of usable energy comes when male and female are balanced within us. And this is what's being talked about in alchemy. This is what these Native Americans understood. And this is something that I adopted, a philosophy that I adopted that worked like gangbusters. And, it's very, I take it very seriously in one respect, though I'm being very poetic and romantic and playful with the adoption of these names. But that's where Claudia Pavonis came from. That just understanding that you are made of male and female. And one more thing, if I may say, for the first like six, seven weeks when you're in your mother's womb, you're neither male nor female. You're actually both.
Yeah, decides later in the process, I believe, and it has everything to do with your endocrine system. And I think was one what's his name again now? Curtis Duncan, Dr. Curtis Duncan. He mentioned as well that earliest process is a definition that everyone is female, I believe, and then there's a certain endocrine, trigger that occurs during a certain point, which either will take you in the male or basically keep you in the female direction, I believe. So, very interesting.
Really interesting.
Now, of course, the book is available on the website, Marty. Both of them, both two, and then when was the ETA on the volume two? Here, you said just in a couple of days, right?
Yeah, I'm actually supposed to get the proof tomorrow, so I just got to go over it and look over it again and then approve it. So I'm guessing this week it should be done. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, unless I make any huge mistakes. but yeah, and so that should be out within this next week or two for sure. So and then the other two are available. So
indeed. Now, what are there some other directions you take in volume two? I mean, there's just a slew of fantastic material in volume one. I'm loving it. But are you going in a different direction, or are you kind of just continuing in the same vein for volume two?
I kind of in the same vein. I'm covering just a bunch of different things, like looking at the unity of opposites again, looking at squaring the circle again, doubling the cube. What else? Oh, I deconstruct the first verse of Genesis 1:1 in there. The name Hermes Trismegistus, the cross of Christ. Just a bunch of different concepts like this. It's really an extension of the first volume. And then the third volume that I'm going to be working on, which I hope to have out by the end of the year, we'll see what happens. But it's just a continuation of looking at Pythagorean's formula, looking at what we just talked about, the Holy Bible, looking at juggling, looking at the universe in a nutshell is one I have a video on that I'm going to do a chapter on that. So basically just using the cipher and once again, just kind of taking it on a world tour and looking at all the different ways that we can, all the different phenomena and subjects and things that we can look into, and showing how that so much of this stuff is absolutely has been encoded, if as far as I can tell anyway. So,
well, certainly. Where do you think this work is going take you, Marty, in terms of understanding of everything? And where do you want to take it yourself? Are you looking at making more video material, something more elaborate in that regard, or where do you wish that you could take it?
Wherever the good Lord's going to take me. I'm just kind of going with it, you know? I know that it's very close to me, and it's, I don't know, it's been such an amazing experience, and I want to treat it with respect. I want to treat it with as sacred, and but still want to be, you know, myself, being fun loving and, you know, just being able to joke around and things like that. And I don't know where it's going to take me. I don't know what people are going to think about it. You know, so many people just completely disregard it because it's math. So many people disregard, I mean, before you can even get to this, I mean, there's so many barriers that are before this that people already have these preconceived notions about, yeah, you know,
because it's not math. I sort of mentioned that I think I mentioned this to you last time, but I always hated math, but I don't hate the math that you perform in the book, you know, that you can follow along. And that's something completely different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Thank you for saying that. Cause that's what I'm trying to do anyway. So, but yeah, I mean, there's so many barriers that are before this that, you know, people, it's like, okay, well, this is going to challenge your beliefs. You know, what is your belief in the ideas of God? What is your belief in the idea that there's science in the Bible? What's your belief in secret societies? What's your belief in numerology? What's your belief in astrology? What's your belief in mathematics and language? You know, it's going to challenge every single one of these, you know, and for many people. And so I already know that I'm not naive enough to, you know, to know that that's not going to prevent a lot of people from even looking into this. I mean, I don't know how many people have just completely washed their hands of my work because they're like, oh, I'm not into math. And so I'm not going to reach those people. And I recognize that. So I also know that this is only going to reach a certain amount of people, people that are really seeking, I would say, people that are truly open-minded, people that are truly looking for an answer. You know, so many people that are going to come to this, and it's like, well, how does this fit into my theory of the Arcturians from Nibiru coming? You know, well, it doesn't. It doesn't fit into that theory. You know, so that's going to dispel a lot of those people too. So wherever it takes me is where I'm willing to go. And I just want to keep working on it. So.
Well, indeed, we'll see where the road travels, but it's absolutely fascinating. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, Marty, and just touching base on this topic alone, and you're doing great work. So, you know, please keep it up, Marty. And give us the details again about the website here before we wrap things up. If there's anything else you want to mention, if you have something upcoming, the floor is yours.
Oh, sure. Yeah. MartyLeeds33.com and MartyLeeds33 on YouTube. They are right there. I also have I'm a singer-songwriter too, and I write songs and that sort of thing. So I have an account on Reverb Nation. It's just MartyLeeds33 if you want to come check that out. I have one record for sale, and I've got two for free download. They're just at-home records you can buy. At-home records you can download. Apologies. And then also a free lecture series on the website, books for sale, that sort of stuff. So, and then upcoming, I'm doing a I don't really have any, not doing anything really until 2015, any like conferences or anything like that. And I'm doing a conference in Hawaii, the River of Stars Astrology Conference, and I might be doing Free Your Mind again. I just did that, which that presentation should be coming out within the next month or so, I think. So, so look for that. That should be come up on YouTube. So yeah, just some things coming up, but, just going to keep kicking, just keep on keeping on. So
keep it up, Marty. It's good stuff. Great talking with you again. We'll stay in touch, Marty. We'll have you back soon again and continue our conversation and talk more about all of these things.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Henrik.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. More is coming up here in just a few days. We have Israeli Yuri Geller on Red Eyes Radio. Going to talk about his time as a spy for the Mossad and the CIA. Very interesting. Then we have Guillaume Burisson and Tom Minogue, and also Dane Wigington on geoengineering. Don't miss the latest with Tom Sunik, by the way, on Radio 314, a very interesting program on European identity, paganism, and metapolitics. That's basically beyond the phony left versus right binary political spectrum that so many people are trapped in. Very interesting. I do recommend it. Have a great rest of your day. We'll speak to you in just a few days. Take care. Bye-bye.